Hello, welcome to Pining for Penny Pod. I'm Heather.
And I'm Emily. This is a fan podcast to summarize, discuss, and dissect the whole Armand Gamache mystery series by Louise Penny. We are going book by book in the order they were written, a few chapters at a time.
And most importantly, we are here to enjoy some wine, scotch, beer, cafe au lait, and pretty much any food described in the novels.
So some disclaimers, we may have some spoilers for future books, but we will do our best to not ruin any big things. And also, this is so very important, we are not Francophones, nor are we Canadian.
No, we're recording this podcast from lovely Houston, Texas, so please excuse our French. We're trying.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We're getting mildly better. I'm getting mildly better. Heather's out Frenching me.
I don't think that's true. Just so you guys know, Emily won't let me start the podcast with bonjour. So I tried to throw her off with oui, allo. And I was trying really hard not to laugh.
Maybe one of these. I just have to have a good response. I think.
Yeah, start preparing your response now, yes. Because I don't think your initial Mm-mm. is to say anything in French.
Nope. I look like a deer in headlights, yeah. And then I panic.
And then we laugh.
A million words go through my mind that are not French.
Most of them Spanish. Mostly. Or English.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, shall we get into our... No, we should not get into our first weekly investigative report.
No, we gotta speak some French. Some French.
First, these Anglophones will attempt to speak French in our That's a French-Ass Name segment.
Mm-hmm.
So, Emily, would you like to introduce some French-ass names?
Oh, sure. Our first word that we are going to try to pronounce is dépanneau.
Ooh!
Ooh.
Wait, that was the best word you've ever said in French, I think.
Oh, thank you.
I don't even want to go after that. I'm nervous. Dépanneau? Something like that?
Sounds lovely.
Close
what
enough?
What does it mean?
So we're going to talk about it later, okay. But I'll tell you just briefly, it's like a convenience store.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Wait, was that audible on the podcast?
Well, who knows?
Am I still hungry?
There's always second dinner.
We didn't have dessert.
We didn't. No. We can take a break in a minute.
We might. No, we're good. Sorry. If you guys didn't hear, my stomach just made a ridiculous noise.
But we had a delicious dinner that yes. We'll talk about at the very end.
Yes. 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 Okay. So our next French-ass name / French-ass word is just the name of a newspaper?
Yep.
La Journée.
La Journée.
I guess. I don't know. La I didn't journée. Look it up. But it's probably more like La Journée.
Oh, right.
Get something like that.
La Journée.
Did you just swallow a goldfish or something?
I just swallowed the R. Yeah.
just forget about it. Don't let it come out.
Nope.
So that's fun.
I wanted to escape, but I swallowed it.
Okay, next.
De quoi? De quoi? De quoi?
De quoi? Yeah.
De quoi?
De quoi?
De quoi.
It means okay. It means like, you know. It's spelt d'accord.
Yep.
As with in an Roger that.
D'accord.
They actually say a lot in the book, so hopefully we can, hopefully we're saying that right. De quoi? De quoi? Hmm. Because, you know, they're, like, in the investigation, so it's always, mm-hmm. like, do this, this, and this, and then they say, d'accord.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like,
d'accord.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got mm-hmm. it.
Okay.
Okay, and here is our last attempt. It's rather ambitious. I'll let Emily do it.
Oui. Est-ce que je pouvais aider?
I think that was close.
Est-ce que vous pouvez aider? There's a whole bunch of syllables in there.
There's too many syllables.
Okay.
Okay.
We. I'm saying
we.
Did I just say K a million times?
Oh, were you just saying K? Like
Q? It's quite possible.
Well, no, there's a K in there. Okay. We. Est-ce que je peux vous aider?
Yeah. That sounds good.
So apparently that means.
Oh, can I help you?
Nice.
Yeah.
That is way too many. Noises to mean, can I help you? Isn't that a lot?
Est-ce que je peux vous aider?
Pouvez-vous?
Oui. Est-ce que je peux vous aider?
Yeah, that was exactly right. Hopefully no one heard that one. Yeah. Okay.
Amazing.
So that was our French lesson for the day. Mm-hmm. So let's get into our first weekly investigative report, where we summarize the chapters from this week's reading. As always, you got Emily on the odds,
mm-hmm.
for this book at least.
Yep.
And we're doing chapters 19 to 24 this week.
Yes. And we are in chapters 19 through 24 of The Cruelest Month.
That's right.
Yes. And I was just telling Heather that I think so far, with rereading these books, I think number 3 is my favorite. Like, I feel like 1 and 2 were kind of like the pilot episodes where things are still kind of a little bit awkward. You got to introduce everybody. You're getting to know people. They're getting comfortable with each other. Getting to know all about you.
There you go. Good job.
bonus points if anyone knows what that is from.
Right. Yes, I agree. This is really in the groove. She's really in the groove here.
I think so. Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, and I feel like the characters are all meshing and the banter just feels more natural.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So Cruelest Month, book 3, chapters 19 through 24.
Let's do it.
All right. So 19 opens up with Clara and Myrna, who are back in Myrna's home. So they had gone to the Hadley house with Agent Lacoste, and we're having kind of a private moment of sorts to kind of pay homage to Madeline, have some like good remembrances of her. And then there was also the baby Robin that was still dead in the middle of the room. Yeah. And yeah, so Clara she's grappling with Madeline and then also feeling like, did she kill this baby bird? And, you know, having to like make her peace with that. So kind of a little bit of a sad, nice closing little ceremony they had over at the Hadley house. They're also, somebody was thinking about a dinner, or maybe it was just like reflecting back on the dinner that Clara and Peter had with Monsieur Boulevet. And I thought this was actually, it was way too long of a section to type out.
That's fine.
But I did think that this was a really sweet paragraph where they're talking about how Monsieur Boulevet, who came over to have dinner, and he's obviously grieving Madeline. And, you know, and as friends do, he comes and he sits at the table and is just kind of around life in a way. Peter's kind of talking about whatever. Claire is talking about whatever. And they're just refilling his wine glass.
Oh, yes.
And it's just about, you know, that's what friends are for. Like, sometimes, like, you don't need someone to, like, sit and tell you everything's okay. You just need company.
You just need to be there and you need to have your wine glass filled.
Exactly. So I thought that was a really sweet section that they were reminiscing about. So Claire and Myrna, so they're at Myrna's home, Peter phones and tells them that he's coming over with a newspaper article, and this is where kind of like this like bomb drops. So Peter comes over and he's like, read this. And I almost feel like
In La Journée. Okay.
And I almost feel like Peter is like taking some kind of, you know, enjoyment out of this article about Gamache.
He would, especially in these first 3 novels, I think he's somewhat jealous of his relationship with his wife, with Gamache's relationship with Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Something about that bothers him a little bit, even though it's like purely platonic, like Gamache and Renmarie are relationship goals times 100.
Yep.
So I don't know why he's, like, jealous of that thing that they have, but that makes sense.
Yep. So, basically, this article is, it doesn't specifically, I don't think, name Gamache, but it talks about the leadership in the Swert, who are getting paid, they're getting paid way too much money. They think that even $92,000 is way too much money for a head of a department to get paid, which is ridiculous.
I mean, okay, so it was in 2007?
I think this is like probably 2009.
Well, 2007 was the last, was the second novel. No?
Oh, you're right. 2007.
2007. Mm-hmm. So think about that. That's like 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So was that a lot of money back then? Back then? I'm imagining it wasn't that much money.
No, I don't think it was, especially if you're head of the department and, you know, that's a lot of stress. I think that's fine. But he talks about wearing high-end clothing, mostly from England, which probably is, like, a big thing for Francophones.
Oh, yeah.
Taking vacations in France.
Okay, I'm sorry that his family lives there, and also he went to Cambridge. So, right. Yeah, obviously some of his wardrobe is going to be...
And then just recently buying a Volvo.
I laughed so hard.
A Volvo.
A Volvo.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the Volvos are big things over there.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I have no idea what that's about. I couldn't imagine how, if they're expensive or not. Yeah. They don't seem like to be like,
I mean, they're
luxury cars. I mean, like super.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're probably up there with Audis. I haven't, I've been on the car market a little bit.
But they're not like a Porsche.
Correct.
Okay.
No. It would be a different story. And also, I think of Volvo. When I think of Volvos, I think of moms driving their children in a very safe car to soccer practice.
Or an old person. I don't know why I think of that. Do I even know what a Volvo looks like now? But yeah, that's amazing. I love the article.
It's very outrageous. So in this chapter, we also get a little bit more clarity about what happened with the Arnault case. So Arnault, we find out, was a superintendent in the serious crime squad and had ignored some of the violent crimes, even murder, and then eventually had ordered some of his agents to even murder. Myrna is disgusted because she said many of these crimes were against Native people in Canada. Mm. And the papers made it seem that Arnault was allowing the bad guys just to kill each other. Like, that's what he was trying to paint. He's like, why should we waste police resources? Just let them fight it out, and we don't have to do anything because they'll kill each other out, which...
Great strategy.
Yeah, perfect. and Gamache had exposed the crimes, and then the only person who was standing by him, because he... You know, was exposing some of like the underbelly, the not so desirable stuff of the Swert, was his immediate supervisor, and then the papers at that time had also painted Gamache as potentially an accomplice, because how could the head of homicide not know what was happening?
It's like, well, yeah, he knew what was happening, and that's why he exposed him. Right. Are y'all dumb?
Right. So. So yeah, so that's a little bit more background, and the Arnault case is really, you know, kind of coming into full swing, which I'm excited to get more into that. Mm-hmm. This chapter also, Gabri really shone in this chapter. I loved.
Tell me all about him, please.
I loved this entire interaction. So, as you know, what is her name? Jean Chauvet. She had disappeared, and they were waiting for her to come back to the bistro. Gabri sees her come back, and he tries to discreetly call Gamache on the phone and say, "She's back. She's back." And Gamache is not getting it. He's like, "Excuse me? What? She's back." And finally, Gabri is like, screams into the phone, "The awful witch is back."
Oh my God.
Which is hilarious, because he's trying to be all discreet.
And he's just yelling.
Yeah.
About the awful witch.
The awful witch. And then Gamache gives Gabri this awful job of like, well, you can't let her leave until I get there. So Gabri is just fretting about her leaving. What is he going to do? He's like sneaking about the bistro, trying to be like all, I don't know, incognito, making sure she doesn't leave.
He definitely cannot be incognito.
He cannot.
That's like the opposite of Gabri.
It's amazing. But then Gabri also kind of, we get it into his head a little bit. So he goes down this rabbit hole of thinking about all of the people he had hurt over the years, and considers and you know, is that why he and Olivier had moved to Three Pines in the first place, was to kind of get rid of their old life and move someplace new? Mm-hmm. And so he's thinking about, like people out there that would maybe want to murder him. And so he's kind of, like, reliving these, like, past hurts that he had put on other people.
Didn't they meet in therapy?
Yes.
But, like, as different, as separate.
Correct.
You are clients.
Correct. Yep. Exactly.
So good.
So, of course, Cabri is also just convinced that Jean is a witch and that Olivier's cat has become her familiar. And so he's also, like, yelling at her cat or his cat.
I didn't know Olivier had a cat.
I didn't know.
Why is it not in the books that much? Because that is a missed opportunity.
It is. But now we know Olivier has a cat.
Okay.
And also Cabri in this chapter, he goes to check in on the computer. And what does he see? But he opens up to a screen as Euphedra, of course, briefly considers buying it for himself. And then he calls Olivier, of course, because that's the first person you would call when you see something about Euphedra. And you're like, oh, is this the murder? Is this the murder
drug?
Tool?
Mm-hmm. Tool? Mm-hmm. Weapon?
Weapon? Sure.
Who left that on the computer? Who was searching for it?
Who we will find out.
We will.
All right. So as I kind of alluded, this is, we're going to go into like our, after our summary, talk about our quick quote corner. So this is kind of where we highlight our favorite quotes from the chapter. I don't have any quotes. I think you should all just go back, reread chapter 19, thoroughly enjoy the little conversation, the memory about Monsieur Boulevard going to Clara and Peter's, and then the whole interaction with Cabri.
Yeah, and just the whole chapter.
Yeah, basically just reread it.
Sometimes that's my suggestion as well. I'm like, no, just don't listen to me.
Yeah.
Just shut me up and go read this chapter again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's my suggestion. So we're going to get into our bistro brief.
This is the best one I've ever seen.
The bistro brief. So we're going to discuss our favorite foods consumed, how likely we are to eat them, and what we are currently eating and drinking right now. So this chapter basically, it alluded to some other food, but toast. Toast was made. But toast was made in a very interesting way.
Oh, who was having the toast?
Clara and Myrna.
Okay.
And they had those teepee toasters.
Oh.
And it's like, you know, it kind of looks like a teepee, and I feel like you put the, like, the little doors open up on the sides, and then you put the bread in there, and you close up the doors, and then it toasts.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
We should post a photo of a teepee toaster.
I agree.
Okay.
Yep.
Toast is fabulous, but just the fact that it just says toast. Like, no toppings, nothing, just
toast.
Well, that sounds lovely. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that all of your chapters were long and all of mine were short, except the last one that I had to do, so I didn't envy you this week in terms of summarizing, but you did a good job.
Thank you.
And also, I'm sorry if my voice sounds weird, but it's still not back to normal. Like, this is not my normal voice. No. And I actually got, I posted on Instagram, so you guys probably know that I had COVID a couple weeks ago, and I got, like, a message from the doctor's office, like a weekly, like, I don't know, pamphlet for patrons of my doctor's office. What am I saying?
Patients.
And it was like, what is COVID doing to our vocal cords?
Oh, that's interesting.
So there's like a bunch of research studies just about how people's voices are changing after COVID, like long term. And I'm like, I hope I don't sound like this forever.
I mean, I love the raspy voice, though. That's always my favorite part of getting sick. If there's, like, a good part of getting sick, it's having that, like, lounge singer voice.
Yes. Luckily, I'm not a singer or something like that, and it didn't completely ruin my career.
True.
I'm just a podcaster as my full-time job. Making a lot of money off of this voice, okay, Emily? So I would like
You should get that insured.
I should get my voice insured.
It's fine.
What happened?
It's just my phone.
Okay. So let's get into our weekly investigative report for Chapter 20.
Mm-hmm.
So Zhang-Yi is handing out assignments to the rest of the investigators for the case. of course, this whole chapter just starts with Nicole being a little baby about her assignment for no reason. I won't even get into the details. It's just her. And then she receives a mysterious phone call, as she has been. And I think we talked about this last book, and I wanted to clarify, because you had asked, is she talking to the same person as Agent Robert? And we still don't know.
Right.
Actually. It's always, like, mysterious when she's on the phone, but when he talks specifically to Michel Brebeuf. Mm-hmm. And they don't ever say that she's talking to him. So right. We don't actually know who she's talking to, right. But I just assumed it was him. But I don't know why they don't say. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, mysterious phone call. Asking for an update on the case. She's acting super snotty.
Of course.
Saying that she showed up Gamache by guessing that Madeline was scared to death. She's like, I cracked the case. And the person on the phone is like, can you please stop fucking up? They literally say that to her.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to show him up. Like, you're not doing this right. And then they just hang up the phone. Yeah. So this person's not pleased with her. But I don't know what they want out of her.
True.
It doesn't really ever say. So, okay. Anyway. Gamache takes Agent Robert to the bistro just to discuss the case. And they're going to interview Jean Chauvet. And they hear from several different groups of people the word ephedra.
Ephedra.
And ephedra. Like people whispering and talking about it. And they're just like, Our whole thing, like, you know, now whoever has ephedra has flushed it down the freaking toilet by this point. You know what I mean? So it's a huge issue. And it's revealed that Robert is a Dumbo and searched for it on Gabri's computer. And he left the search open. So naturally now the whole town knows because it's Gabri.
Yeah.
Of course he's going to gossip.
To Olivier, who also then is going to gossip.
The two of them are going to. Yeah. And then, you know, everyone, it's a small town.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, if you need information spread, you go to Gabri and Olivier first.
Exactly. However. Sorry, I shouldn't say that because I totally got that from Georgia Hardstark from My Favorite Murder. She says, however, which isn't a word, but I love when she says it. Anyway, I wrote here. But, so we find out that Brebeuf actually ordered Robert to leak the ephedra information. So he's not a Dumbo. He's following orders. Mm-hmm. He's just pathetic, I wrote. Yeah. So pathetic because he is doing as he says, as Brebeuf says, because he has this idea in his head that he's going to get promoted and he's going to be the chief and he's imagining himself. It's like, dude, you are so low level. They are using you. And even if they do give you like a promotion, it's not going to be the chief. You're not going to be the chief inspector all of a sudden. Like he just has this very naive mind. And on top of all that, what really pisses me off is that he really likes getting Gamache's approval. Mm-hmm. Like, he wants everyone to like him, and it's like, that's not going to happen when you're being dirty.
Right. You know? Being controlled by others. Yep.
It's just pathetic.
Yep. He's pathetic.
He's pissing me off. So, anyway, he leaked the information. And then the chapter ends with Jean-Guy trying to convince Gamache to let him stay with him when he interviews Jean Chauvet. He's, like, being very protective of the chief, and it's cute, but also, like, why?
Right.
He's very worried that she's going to use Gamache's beliefs against him, basically, to sway him or, like, I don't know, bring him down or something like that because, you know, he has strong beliefs in God, and she's supposedly a witch. Mm-hmm. Or didn't we find out she was Wiccan?
Yeah, she's Wiccan.
She's Wiccan. Yeah. But, yeah, so she's a witch.
Right.
Anyway. He's very concerned for Gamache. And Gamache is just like, thanks, but I got it.
Right.
And go, go, go. There's too much to be done. And he sends him away to do his assignment. So that's it. That was a very short chapter.
Okay.
So on to our quick quote corner for chapter 20. So on that topic, Jean-Guy is concerned that this witch is going to manipulate Gamache because of his religious views. So here's a quote. Beauvoir held Gamache's gaze, then dropped it. He knew then what would kill Gamache. Not an evil spirit, not a ghoul or a ghost, but his own pride.
Mm. Wah, wah, wah. Yeah.
And, you know, you want to think, like, is this foreshadowing or something like that? Mm-hmm. Obviously, she's still writing novels. We don't
right.
know.
Right.
but he is a very proud person, and he does pretty much always stand up for what he truly believes right. in and doesn't let anything get in the way of that. And is that sometimes his downfall? Yes. It
probably.
It definitely yeah. is. I mean, with the Arnaud case, for example, yeah. like we know what role he played in all of that. Yeah. And now you have people writing BS about him yeah. in La Journée.
Yeah.
So I understand his concern. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like standing on like so many principles.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, but he's a strong guy. He's very admirable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love him.
Yes. Me too.
Okay. So that was all. Very short chapter. So into our bistro brief, we did have some food. Oh man, we really should have been having biscotti.
Yeah. Mm. I haven't made biscotti in a while.
Oh, it's fun.
My mom, she's passed around a lot of recipes to me for biscotti, but I've made it several times and it's very good.
Okay, so you can make it for this yes. podcast soon.
Yes.
Okay, so they were dipping biscotti into cappuccinos at the bistro.
Mm-hmm.
The people who were talking about ephedra were.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Okay, also, this is kind of like a quote, but also kind of like the bistro mm-hmm. brief. I just love this comment that Louise Penny made about how people from Quebec stay out on the terraces very late into the fall and starting very early in the spring. Of course, with full jackets,
right,
mittens, scarves, but they just like will do anything if the sun is out. Like if there is sunshine, they need to be out there no matter sure. how cold it sure. is, because like the winter is just probably so
awful.
Gray
yeah.
and so miserable. So I just love picturing them out there with their like down coats on
and their toques.
Like, their toques. They're wearing their toques. They're on the terrace. The terrace. Yeah. I think it's literally just terrace. And they're sipping their cappuccinos.
Yums.
Love it.
Okay, moving along. Chapter 21. So there again was a lot going on in this chapter. Gamache finally gets to interview Jean. And they do actually have a very pleasant back and forth.
I thought it was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, and I think she, you know, like she starts off with asking him a bunch of questions, and it's interesting to see how Gamache fields those questions, because in his mind, he, you know, where he could be dishonest and not tell her about aspects of the case, but he finds that dishonesty actually weakens him in front of suspects if they find out that he has been dishonest. And that makes so much sense. And so he yeah. chooses to be honest and talk to her just almost like a normal person.
Yeah,
without,
openly.
Yeah. And that's also, I think, why we both love the books, too, is that he could be talking to a serial killer, and he likely will potentially have some of the same open, non-judgmental, unbiased conversation just to kind of try to understand that person more,
yep.
which I think is very cool. In chapter 21, Jean-Guy, so while Gamache is interviewing Jean, Jean-Guy visits La Maison Biloquique. I don't know. We didn't have that. What
is that a library?
No. You would think.
Biologique? We definitely need to look up how to say that.
Well, so it's also the Dépanneur.
Oh.
So kind of that convenience store of sorts. But yeah, so Jean-Guy goes in there to speak with Odile, and I feel like there was something in here that I should have written down. Yes, okay. So he goes in to speak with Odile, and the description of her is interesting. So She's described as a pretty, pudgy woman in her late 30s, early 40s. And she was standing behind the counter in her...
Oh. What is happening in here tonight?
Is it
the witch?
Is it the witch? We're talking about witches.
Okay, continue.
Okay, so Zhang-Yi goes in, and Odile's description of what she looks like is interesting. So just a pudgy, pleasant-looking woman. But she was reading an exercise book that she closes when he walks in.
Is she on a Fedra?
I don't know, but that's kind of interesting, right? That would pique my interest if I was looking for someone who potentially would have a Fedra on them. So when he first introduces himself, and he's, you know, playing kind of a little bit of a cagey police officer, so he introduces himself as part of the police, and Odile immediately becomes afraid that something has happened to Gilles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
Gilles. So at that point...
Oh, right, her boyfriend.
Yes.
She's, like, very worried that...
Something has happened to him.
Well, yeah, what would you think if, like, a... police officer came to your place. I mean, it's, you don't live in the same place as your mom, but I would immediately think, like, what happened to a family member?
Yeah. You know, honestly.
Please do continue that sentence.
The one time that police did come to my apartment late at night. Well, I don't know if I knew that they were police officers. Okay. So they came to my apartment late at night, like 10 o'clock, and...
Here?
No, this was in San Diego.
San Diego.
And then I think even after we saw that they were police officers, my mind immediately went to the fact that I had two cats in the apartment that were not on the lease, and I thought I was in trouble for the cats. So... That's where my brain went to first.
Coming to arrest you for that serious crime.
Yep. So not any of my friends, not any family member. No crimes, except for my own, of having two cats, not on a lease.
Riley, please stop that. That's amazing.
Yep.
And then when there was a crime, you didn't think there was.
Correct.
When Emily and I lived together... And we were broken into. Television was clearly missing.
Which I thought Heather had taken for the weekend to play video games at her now husband's apartment.
Because, you know, he didn't have a television or anything.
You had that huge box television.
He had the most hideous, awful television. It was, you're right. There was a chance that we took the TV, but no. We were robbed. Oh, God. Good times.
Yep. Great times. So okay. That's how I react to police officers. But what is kind of also interesting is that Zhang-Yi kind of really sees Odile for the first time when she becomes very concerned about Gilles. So he sees her as like a brilliant, gorgeous, dynamic woman who's just hiding behind layers of dullness and smiles, which is fascinating.
That is fascinating. I don't remember that line from the book. I like that description of her because thus far we don't know how to feel about her.
Right.
And they make her seem dumb because she like can't do poetry or something like that. But like
kind of pathetic in a way.
Yeah. And also like since when does being bad at poetry mean you're dumb? You're dumb because like it's poetry.
It's hard.
You know? Yeah. Like I'm sorry.
I feel like it's one of those subjective things.
Very much so.
But then also kind of just as Heather just said, you know, the whole town kind of thinks she's dumb. And Zhang-Yi feels bad for her because she's – nobody thought to tell her that Madeline had died. And she just didn't know. So she immediately thought that it was something with Gilles.
She didn't know it was a murder.
Yeah. So then so in their conversation – Zhang-Yi is asking her about her feelings towards Madeline, and he consents that, you know, she's kind of holding something back, that she really didn't have good feelings towards her. And
Riley, the dog, the podcast dog, is needing a lot of attention now.
Must be the weather. It was changing. And so this part of the story also, he's just drawn to this wooden chair in the store, like it's almost speaking to him. And so he goes over and he finds it very weird that he's like drawn to this chair. And this is where Odile tells him about Giles and how he goes out to the forest and speaks to the trees and then builds furniture from the trees according to how they've spoken to him. And Jean-Guy, being Jean-Guy, then leaves the store thinking everyone in the town is crazy.
He does. Everyone. He's so judgmental, and he brings it up in the later chapters again, too. Like, he makes a comment about how he talks to trees and makes fun of him or whatever. And it's just, like, he's so judgmental. Yet he was feeling like he was being called to the chair.
Exactly.
Come on, dude. I feel like I'm so excited for future books when he starts to evolve a little bit more because I really like his rough beginnings.
I agree. Yep. His humbling.
His, yeah.
He'll have some humbling later on.
Exactly.
I mean, I kind of alluded to some quotes in there. I think it's wonderful how they describe Odile or how Louise Penny describes Odile. And there really wasn't any food in this. There was like the anti-food with the exercise book.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, very true. No food for you. So this is a really random aside that probably has nothing to do with anything, but we're watching Impeachment American Crime Story.
Okay.
Did you ever watch any of the American Crime Stories? Because they did like the really good O.J. Simpson reenactment thing. Okay. Not reenactment. Dramatization.
Right.
And then they did the murder of Gianni Versace in season 2. Oh, okay. And in season 3 is about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Oh, interesting.
And all of this dieting and exercise talk just reminds me of watching that show end of the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was on a diet.
Yeah.
Everyone was working out. There were so many new different types of diets. And, like, in the TV show, there's so many references to it. They just do, like, such a good job of, like, feeling like you're in the 90s.
Well, and I remember ephedra was big in the 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I don't know when it became illegal.
I don't remember. I don't know either.
But I'm assuming it was around then.
Right.
Because just when people started using it a lot, then there was probably those issues. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it just made me think of that. It's a really good show. Really, really good. Okay, shall we move on to our weekly investigative report for chapter 22?
Yes.
Okay. I'm glad you said so. So chapter 22 starts out with Agent Robert. He's at the general store, Monsieur Bellevue's.
Bellevue.
To interview him. Mm-hmm. So we find out that he did indeed love Madeline. Like, you know, it's been alluding to that, but sure. We haven't really actually heard it from his mouth. Mm-hmm. And he did love her, but we do find out they were not lovers.
Correct.
So they had not had sexual relations. Just like Bill Clinton did not have sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky.
He did not.
So also his wife, so Monsieur Bellevue's wife died of a stroke 2.5 years ago. So we just got that piece of information, like, you know, probably good to know how she died, considering now he's been in love with two women who have died.
Yeah. It's good to know those things.
Yeah, good to know. And then it cuts to this memory that Agent Robert is having. Mm-hmm. And it's about something Gamache taught him. So he's, like, remembering that Gamache taught him the four, you know, statements of the four statements of wisdom. He also taught him to listen. Because as long as you're not listening and you're talking, then you're not learning anything. So if you're, like, going into an interview, mm-hmm. like, if you're the one doing all the talking, then you're clearly not learning anything.
Sure.
So that was a tip that he was remembering. And he took all of this information and he shared it with Brebeuf, saying, like, this is what Gamache taught me. Uh-huh. And we kind of get, like, a moment of sadness from Brebeuf. I can't deal with this right now. How is one supposed to podcast? Does she want to say something? Would you like to speak? Roddy, speak. Good girl. Okay, good job. So we get a moment of, like, sadness from Brebeuf, because as he's, like, reminiscing on these things that Gamache likes to teach, Like, he's remembering Gamache fondly, and he's, like, sad that he has to betray him. At first I feel bad. I'm like, oh, that is sad. But then I'm just like, what do you mean you have to betray him?
Yeah.
You're making a decision.
Right.
Like, maybe you, quote, have to save your ass, but that's still not have to. You're still choosing. And Gamache is the one that's not doing anything wrong. So, like, fuck off. Yeah. That's what I have to say to that. Okay, and then we're back at the store, and basically Myrna comes in, and she asks for La Journée, because everyone is talking about the interesting article in there, and then all three of them, like, read it together, and then the chapter ends when a quacking noise drew their attention outside.
Love it.
There's just, like, a couple little, like, just references to quacking, and it doesn't ever explain it yet, and it makes me so happy.
Cannot wait.
Yes, I can't wait. Okay, I love this quote. I'm pumped. So, okay. So, Agent Robert just, like, expects Monsieur Bellevue's general store to be at Depenieux. Which is basically, by the way, I had to look it up, it's, like, a shitty American convenience store.
Okay.
Like, you know, he's expecting it to be like that. But it's actually lovely. So this quote describes Monsieur Bellevue's general store, which we've never really gotten a description of yet. And this is also basically our bistro brief, because it talks about his food, too. So it says, the dark wood shelves held neatly displayed cans of vegetables and preserves, cereals and pastas and jams and jellies, soups and crackers. All good quality, all neat and orderly. No overcrowding, no gluttony.
Love it.
The floors were scuffed but clean linoleum, and a fan moved slowly round on the tongue and groove ceiling. Mm. It just sounds so nice. Okay, do you know what tongue and groove is? I had to look up what tongue and groove ceiling was. Did you know? It's just, it's fabulous. It's just wood. It's a wood ceiling. But the tongue and groove is like a method just to fit wood into each other, essentially.
Right.
But yeah, it's just like paneling, and, you know, they'll start here, and the next one starts here, and then they're like this, like that. But it's a beautiful wood ceiling, dark wood shelves and stuff, and a very neat, orderly, fancy soups and crackers and stuff. I would love to go in there.
That sounds kind of like the Ash Building here in Houston.
Yes, it's exactly
That's what I imagine it looking like now.
That is such a good comparison. If you live in Houston, go to Ash Building.
Yes. And now I feel like we should go visit there and take a picture of their shells and say this is likely what Monsieur Bellevue.
Yeah.
What his general store looks like.
Yes, agreed. And we will tag them, and then they'll give us a free item.
Take it.
Okay. So that was my quick quote and my bistro brief. Lots of foods in theirs. In theirs. Okay. I'm done with chapter 22.
Okay. Weekly investigative report, chapter 23. Again, another really brilliant chapter by Louise Benny. I love this section.
Oh, I like this chapter.
So Jean-Guy is hilariously walking through the woods in his fancy-ass Italian leather shoes, knowing full well that he's about to walk through the woods, and they're just getting destroyed. He's walking through mud, and there's sticks, and there's rocks.
More than one time in these novels, Jean-Guy has purposefully, like, worn something fancy and knew it wasn't good. Like, I remember, like, he was making fun of Gamache for wearing some sort of scarf or hat.
Yeah.
And he was like, I would never wear that. But also, he looks quite warm.
Yes. He's all about the style.
He's all about the style.
Yeah, but it just does not work. So, yeah, so he's hilariously walking in the woods. He's also holding a stick in case of bears.
Oh, the inner monologue
is so fantastic.
Yeah,
because he knows that he shouldn't hold his gun, because that would make sense. But he's so conditioned by Gamache to not pull out your weapon unless you're going to kill. So he's going to hold on to this stick. But then he's also like, but does sticks actually do anything, or is that for sharks? He doesn't know, but he's holding onto a stick for his dear life and then yelling through the woods for Giles. And as he's walked through the woods, he starts thinking of the Green Man, which I messaged Heather after this chapter. I'm like, the Green Man is popping up in so many of the books that we're reading.
It's so weird.
It's so random. Yeah. But, I mean, I guess we're kind of reading some, like, mythological type books. So I think
these are just murder mysteries that occur in the 21st century.
So much more random to mention the Green Man.
Yeah.
So the Green Man is a mythological character that's half man, half tree. And as Giles approaches from somewhere in the woods, Jean-Guy believes that he is the Green
He's
Man.
He's like, I found him.
He's just like this burly man.
Yeah.
Your sexy lumberjack.
A sexy lumberjack. A true sexy lumberjack.
Yes. And so Giles and Jean-Guy, they have this like really touching back and forth. And Giles just sounds like such a charming man. Like he just has like such a depth of emotion and sensitivity to him, which I think is pretty attractive, we'll just say that.
And plus, he is a sexy lumberjack on
yes,
top of it. So.
Big burly man with a big beard and bits of whatever tree stuff on him. At one point, Jean-Guy, like, he gets close and he's like expecting just to smell like dirty man.
No, but he smells like nice wood.
Yeah, like pine trees.
Pine trees?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Sign me up.
Perfect. So. Jean-Guy finds that Giles thought Madeline was a beautiful woman and that she was just like this type of person that just loved people, you know, loved men, women. It really didn't matter. She just had a lot of love to give and not like romantic necessarily, but she just kind of exuded warmth. And Jean-Guy asked him about like, you know, her relationship with Monsieur Boulevou. And he thought that Madeline had felt pity for him because his wife had just died, and which is sad. But then Giles himself becomes very sad and tells about like his whole grieving process, like screaming in the woods one day and then crying and then feeling like he was over it. But then he shows more emotion with Jean-Guy. And I feel like to Jean-Guy's credit, I don't remember him necessarily being too well. I could be misremembering this. Was he kind of repulsed by, or like, taken
Not
aback
yet.
By the emotion that Giles was showing?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I don't think he was feeling that negatively towards him until the end.
Yeah. And then Jean-Guy asked Giles if Odile knew that he loved Madeline. And even if Odile did know, it really wasn't that kind of love. Like, I guess that romantic kind of love. He said that she was just, like, Madeline was just someone people adored from a distance. But he couldn't imagine approaching her, which I thought was, but that also sounds like you really did have feelings
yes,
for
I
her.
Yes, I felt the exact same. I was like, oh, I really wanted it to be, like, just purely platonic. But then when he made that comment, I was like, nah, right. I would be pissed if I was Odile.
Yep, exactly. Because if she had given him a chance, he probably would have taken it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So now, Jean-Guy kind of smells his possible motive that, you know, Odile obviously cares a lot for Giles. Giles potentially cared a lot about Madeline. Everybody loved Madeline. And Odile is maybe harboring some jealous feelings.
And she's kind of an outcast.
Exactly.
Like, she doesn't fit in.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this is the chapter that we see Ruth. She's walking down the sidewalk with her baby ducks going quack,
Yay!
Quack, quack.
So that's what they saw when they looked out the door. It's just Ruth quacking away, and these two ducks are following her.
They're like her mama duck. Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
So they imprinted on her, because remember, it's been a long time since we read the first several Easter chapters, but they found the duck eggs, and then she brought them back to her house and was incubating them in her oven because they knew the mom would never come back because they had accidentally touched them. So now they've imprinted on Ruth, and she's walking around with them quacking.
Yes. Oh, so sweet. And then this is also where Jean, she was like, ugh, that old lady, and Gamache tells her that it's Ruth Zardo, and Jean is so surprised because Ruth has, she's written this wonderful poem, this beautiful poem that kind of commemorates a witch who was hung.
Oh, I loved that part.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually read the poem.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you did?
I did.
Oh, very good.
No, in the book. You know.
You didn't Google it.
No. No, that was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more. Oh, there's more to this chapter. And then I couldn't remember if we had already talked about the origins of Three Pines. But this chapter goes a little bit more in depth.
Yeah, tell us again. I think we might have mentioned it in the first book, but...
But I did think this is interesting. So Three Pines, of course, fictional, was created when the states were having their war with Britain. And so the people who were loyal to Britain supposedly crossed the border into Canada and created this town with the Three Pines that said that it was a safe space for the loyalist. And now I don't know how to feel about that. As an American reading this,
I know.
Three Pines was, you know, was founded by people who wanted to have a king.
Yeah, why?
Why? And be taxed.
What? Yeah. I mean, listen, don't you like taxes now, Emily?
Oh, they're my favorite thing of all time. I mean, they give me stoplights.
Imagine what will happen when they try to tax our whiskey. That was a Hamilton reference. Yes. If you didn't get it, I'm very upset with you, and you shouldn't listen to my podcast. I'm just kidding. Done. You can continue to listen, but I'll probably have more Hamilton references.
Perfect. But yeah, now
I know.
That part did give me kind of pause, because I was like,
Well, does that actually make sense, though, why, like, all of the people in... Well, I guess not all of them, but a lot of them are Anglophones. Because Beauvoir is always coming in and judging them for being Anglophones. Like, Clara and Myrna and Rue, like, they're all Anglophones.
Right. I mean, Myrna did cross over from the U.S. I don't know exactly
she is
where
actually
Claire
American.
And Peter came from.
Yeah. But he's usually... I'm just wondering, like...
Yeah, that does make sense.
You know, they're not Francophones. Some of them are, but I think maybe it's possible that a lot of them are English.
Yeah. And so wrapping up this
United Empire loyalists.
The United Empire loyalists. Sounds very Star Wars-like.
Yeah, right? The Empire. Okay.
So this chapter wraps up with Jean reminiscing about the two men at the seance, Gilles and Beauvel. And she noticed that they both had a negative energy about them, like different reasons, but both of them had a negative energy.
At the seance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And she said that the tall, thin man, which is Beauvel, was hiding something. That was what the energy was telling her, was that he was hiding something.
Oh, snap.
Mm-hmm. And then they end their conversation with Jean, also... feeling something happening around Gamache, saying, just be careful. There is something coming for you.
Yipes.
Yips.
Don't like that.
Nope. So quick quote corner. Again, like, I feel like I could have just, like, quoted this entire page, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
So this was Gilles, and this was him talking about listening to the trees. And it was just like a, you know, lovely page.
Yes,
that you should all go back and read. So Gilles says, one day, and this is in reference to Jean-Guy asking about, you know, what did the trees tell you? And Gilles says, one day you'll hear them in the quiet, some whisper you'd mistaken for the wind all your life, but it'll be the trees. Nature is talking to us all the time. It's just hearing that's the problem. Now I can't hear water or flowers or rocks. Well, actually, I can, but just a little. But trees, their voices are clear to me. Mm. And so, like, what Jean-Guy is, like, what his thoughts are surrounding all of this is that, first of all, Jean-Guy can't believe that he actually wants to know what the trees say.
He's like, I'm disgusted with myself.
But he can't help but want to know. And then when Gilles tells him that, he's basically, you know, you're not ready to hear yet what they have to say, because you're going to mock me, so you're not ready yet. And Jean-Guy he's actually disappointed.
He's like,
I'm not I'm not there yet, Sensei.
Young Padawan.
I can't.
More Star Wars.
Yep.
He has cracks.
He does.
Zhang-Gi has cracks, and they're going to split open. Mm-hmm.
That's how the light gets in.
Good reference.
And there was no food. There was no food in the chapter.
No.
But all the food
is in the next chapter.
Yes.
Yay!
Tell us about it.
Let's finish off strong with chapter 24. Okay, so this is our last weekly investigative report for this chapter, or for this episode. Okay, so Zhang-Gi finds Gamache and Jean Chavez sitting in the church, that's St. Thomas's, and he proceeds to have an extremely nasty back and forth.
It made me uncomfortable.
Oh, it was so bad.
Yeah.
It was very cringy, which is... So, with Jean, by the way. He's having a nasty conversation with Jean. Basically insulting her beliefs, saying it's a hoax. One important thing that he thinks is that that they use it to prey on the weak and the grieving. And, you know, all of this would be a fun bar conversation or something, but, like, you're an investigator in a murder investigation. Like, you can't be treating witnesses like this.
Right.
Or can you? I don't know. I'm not a cop. But doesn't seem smart. And he just kind of lets his emotions get the better of him. And I don't think it's because, like, obviously he's judgy, but that's not the reason he's having this conversation. It's because he's afraid for Gamache. Like, that's what it is all about. Right. So you can kind of forgive him in that sense. But he does say something extremely nasty and basically, you know, he essentially says he would hang her for being a witch.
Yeah. Which is awful.
Oh, yes. He's truly fucked up.
Yeah. Was it going? It wasn't going back to the Ruth Zardo poem because the poem alludes to being hung up in a tree.
Yeah, I think it just alludes to the fact that witches were hung.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Would you hang me on an apple tree or whatever?" And he goes, "Doesn't have to be apple. Any tree would do." And you're like, "Oh damn, this is so heated." Like you just want to be like. Fly on the wall, like, you know? So, she actually doesn't really get heated. She's just, like, used to it. I mean, you probably get used to it, right? And then she just leaves. Gamache is obviously upset with Zhang-Gi.
Yes.
And Zhang-Gi, like, immediately apologizes and says, that was totally out of hand. I freaked out.
Yeah.
So, it all happens very quickly, but very interesting. Okay, so, but we find out, though, really is, like, he kind of came in hot because he's holding the La Journée article, and he knows that he has to be the one to break the news to Gamache about this awful article about him, and that's just giving him so much anxiety. So he gives it to Gamache, finally. Gamache basically ignores it.
Right.
He's like, eh, it's old news. Un blog. A joke.
Un blog.
Un blog. It's a joke, he's saying. And Beauvoir's like, okay. I think it matters. But then he fills him in about Giles Sandin, and then they walk back to the railway station together. So then we go to Hazel Smith's house, and she's thinking how she could possibly write the obituary for Madeline. So it starts out really sad. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the time when we're at her house, it's just, like, sad.
Yeah.
You know? But then Sophie calls for her help, her little princess daughter. Saying she twisted her foot on the pothole in the driveway and she's just like can't walk on it and needs help. She's a little bitch.
Yep.
She's such a little bitch. She's like, oh, I told you so many times to get this pothole filled and I was going out to get your mail and I twisted my ankle.
It's all your fault.
And then, of course, Hazel is an angel. And she just acts super motherly and, like, you know, gets her up on the couch, fixes the ankle, gets her some snacks, et cetera, et cetera. And then, but, like, while this is shitty for me to read, it actually just, like, gets Hazel in her comfort zone and out of, like, the sadness of thinking about the obituary. So it gives her something to focus on. Right. So it's actually a good thing for her.
Right.
Even though.
Because she's so, like, mothering is her
That's her comfort thing. Zone.
Yep.
So it actually it helps her, mm-hmm. even though Sophie's a little C-U-N-T. Okay, my favorite part. Mm-hmm. The investigators discuss the case over a massive lunch that's being provided by Olivier. Oh,
that sounds so good.
Yeah, I can't wait for the bistro brief, but we're not there yet. Okay, so Gamache brings up the article because he's like, I know everyone is sitting here. It's like the elephant in the room. No one's going to be able to think straight until I just bring this up and get it over with. He doesn't want it to interfere with the case. And he's like, everyone needs to forget about it. It's meaningless. It's old news. Whatever. But he's looking around at his people, and he looks at Isabelle Lacoste, and he can tell by a look on her face that she has something to say. Mm-hmm. And he respects her greatly, so he allows her to say it, even though he wants to just, like, shut it down. And she says, she's like, but there is a reason for it. Like, you can't just say there's no reason. It's old news. Like, they want to get rid of you, like the people who are still loyal to Arno. Basically, he doesn't flinch and tells everyone, here's my choice. Like, here's what I can do. I can get upset about it and let it ruin my day and my investigation, or I can let it go. Which one do you think I choose?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, she makes a good point, and I think he realizes that.
Yeah.
He definitely realizes that. But he has to, like, act a certain way to keep everyone in line.
Sure. Yep.
And then also, you know, he can't let the team know, aka Nickel, know that he knows.
Sure.
Because, you know, we get this feeling that he is keeping her close mm-hmm. because he knows something is up.
Yeah.
So anyway, Nickel says something snarky about a suspect, and Gamache gets super pissed and literally sends her out, and everyone's celebrating.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, woo! Yes. Okay, then they just discuss some background information on Madeline. So she studied engineering. She worked in IT for many years, so she seems smart. Mm-hmm. She was well-liked at work, even when she was a boss. People were interviewed, said she was fair. And she eventually quit for unknown reasons. And when they interviewed her boss, they said that it could potentially be due to the fact that she had breast cancer and also went through a divorce around the same time. Exactly. They just suspected it.
Sure.
So she was married to the dude named Francois. I love that name. But it sounds like it just didn't work out. Like, it wasn't, like, an awful divorce or anything like that. And then she moved back here. But all throughout this discussion, it's going like, they're giving details, and it's like going back and forth with, Jean-Guy's mind and he's noticing little tiny things and he's thinking more and more about Nickel and why she's there. And at the end of the chapter, it clicks and he figures out why Gamache wants to keep her so close.
Yeah.
Probably because she's an enemy.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. There is a lot going on here. There's so many quotes because it's so good. But here we go. Okay, so just to show that Hazel Smith, like, her need to care for people. So, quote, 10 minutes later, she had Sophie propped on the sofa in the living room, the TV wand in her hand, a ham and cheese sandwich on a plate, and a diet soda on a tray. She'd bound Sophie's sprained ankle in a tensor bandage and found a pair of old crutches from the last time her daughter had hurt herself. It's just, like, literally instant. Like, she knows exactly what to do. Mm-hmm. She's so ready to take care of her.
Yeah.
Also, I love that they call it a TV wand.
I mean, that is kind of good.
A wand!
Though. It's a magical.
It's freaking magical! Yeah. You have to swish and flick.
We should always call it TV wands from now on.
I need to remember to call it a wand. Like, that's so badass. You're, like, changing the channel and you just realize that you're magical.
Huh.
Yeah. It's amazing. Also, I don't know what a tensor bandage is, but whatever. That's okay. I wrote that. This is absolutely foul, disgusting. So naturally I had to share it. I might vomit even reading it out loud. at the luncheon. He watched as Yvette Nicole leaned so close to her soup, her hair dipped into it. It hung down and created an almost impenetrable curtain. But between the clumps, he could just see her spoon sputter and spill its contents as it shook its way to her mouth.
It is disgusting. But also, why is her hand shaking?
She nervous. Yeah, she doesn't ever seem nervous, though. Yeah. Because she's just gross? I don't know. She just, like, everything about her?
I don't know. But yeah, that sounds awful to me. Getting your hair.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, like, imagining, like, a split pea soup.
Oh, I know. It's chunky because they said clumps.
Yeah.
But the curtain that's set, that's such a good analogy. Like, if it's, like, stuck between two hairs.
Ugh.
Gross. Isn't that so nasty? Oh, my God. I was laughing so hard. It's disgusting. Okay. Moving on. This one is so good. Olivier is serving them.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, he wants to get a little hot goss.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Of course. So, he's the one who spread the news about the Ephedra.
Exactly. He's so good. So, he knocks. Here's the quote. Olivier knocked and brought in coffees and a tray of desserts. He took slightly more time than Gamache would have thought necessary, then finally left, having to satisfy himself with baguette crumbs, but not a single crumb of information.
You can definitely see him just, like, walking around the table, like, yeah. Snooping over people's shoulders.
Yeah, and he finally is like, I can't be here any longer for, like, have a good excuse to have to leave with no new news. I'm devastated. So funny. I love it so much. Okay. Finally, there's a whole situation with the moose, which needs to be discussed. Yes. So, here's the quote. Beauvoir noticed there was one moose left. Lumiere had taken a fruit salad, which Beauvoir was relieved to see, but with some suspicion.
Right.
Because who would choose fruit over chocolate mousse? But now he himself was left with a terrible dilemma, a culinary Sophie's choice, one mousse. Should he take it for himself or leave it for Gamache? It's just so good, his train of thought. Like, I love it so much. I love that he immediately goes from, like, being happy that Robert took the fruit, but super suspicious. Like, right. Who are you?
Right.
Like, who takes fruit?
It's the full range of emotions right there.
Yes, and then, like, what do I do about this one mousse left?
Yep. Because even if you eat it now, you can't enjoy it, because what if Gamache had wanted it?
Yeah.
But then if you give it to Gamache, then you're not
going to enjoy it. Okay, but then, it's at the very end of the thing, so, like, Jean-Guy gleams that Nicole is there to take Gamache down. So then, he slides the mousse to the chief. He's so loyal.
Yes. He's like, you need this chocolate mousse, because who knows how long you're going to be around.
Yeah, exactly. He's, like, literally noticing it. It's all happening, like, right then and there, because he has no idea until this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the mousse. It's beautiful. It's literally beautiful. Okay, we're finally in our last bistro brief. There was a lot of food, and we are eating it.
Yes.
Tonight.
We actually did.
We already ate it. And we will definitely upload those photos. Okay, so obviously, number one, Sophie has a ham and cheese sandwich and a diet soda.
Yep.
Basic. Diet soda.
Oh. Good point.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Why is it a diet soda specifically?
Yeah. She's already been slim. Who had the diet?
I don't know. Maybe she uses a Ephedra. Okay. Here's all the food while we discuss the investigation. So first they start with a sandwich platter with beers and soft beverages. Featured on the platter is a mushroom and coriander soup.
Slurp.
Slurp. Emily made a beautiful one.
Mm-hmm.
Highly recommend. And then there is a grilled vegetable sandwich, goat cheese paninis, and a roast beef and horseradish on croissants. And that's what we decided to have with our mushroom soup. We felt those two just kind of went together and would.
Very good pairings.
Great pairing. I made like a little horseradish cream cheese spread.
It's very good.
We obviously put arugula on the sandwiches.
Yes.
Because how could you not? But yeah, we felt it was a good pairing with a mushroom and coriander soup. That was a little different than our usual ham and cheese, because we always go to that because they're so good.
Yes, and they're often eaten.
Yes.
Yep.
They're always in the book. But yeah, these were something different, and we really, really enjoyed. Okay, so then after that, Olivier brings out, quote, the cheese course after the sandwiches and the soup, which I really need to know what a cheese course is, and why does it come after the sandwiches?
I think that's a European thing.
Just, so you just eat cheese after your meal.
So instead of, that's the dessert.
Oh, cheese. But they also have dessert.
But they do also have dessert.
Just, yes. Don't worry. They're not skipping out on dessert either. Yeah, I love that. It's so interesting because I would usually eat cheese first.
Right.
As an appetizer.
But maybe that's a smart thing, is to have it at the end.
Yeah.
Because that way you eat less cheese.
Yeah. And more meal.
Yep.
I mean, listen, they know what they're doing with food. Mm-hmm. We don't know shit about food.
Yeah.
We got all of our shit from other people. So... You know what I mean?
Very true.
Okay. And then finally, the final course is fancy coffees and desserts, specifically fancy coffees.
Fancy coffees.
And I would like to know what they are.
They're just fancy coffees?
Just fancy coffees and desserts. Among the desserts, we obviously have a featured fruit salad and a chocolate mousse with real cream and a raspberry on top. Like, I like how she had to specify.
Right.
Real cream and a raspberry on top. And that's what Jean-Guy gave up.
What a man.
Would you give up your chocolate mousse for me?
You know what, Heather? I would.
If I had a bad day.
Yes, I would. I'd be share it with you.
We would split the fruit salad and the mousse, let's be honest, because we do like fruit.
We do. It's but delicious.
Yeah, it is. Okay, so yay, we did it. Time to bookend this bitch.
Book it. Book and it.
Book and it. In case y'all needed more reading suggestions. Yes. Because I know you do. Okay, so I wrote this. I finished this book already, but that's okay. Yeah. I'm reading these two right now. First off, Emily and I are both reading Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Dewar?
Sure.
Duer. This is a guy that wrote All the Light We Cannot See, which was like a really popular book several years ago. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't written anything since, so this was really exciting when this came out. And we're reading it for our book club. I love it. It's my second time reading it. And I would say it starts out just like a little bit slow because you're a little confused.
Okay.
Well, not confused, but you're just like, there's so many people and they're not related at all in any way. Mm-hmm. But just trust it and love it, because you will. It has nothing to do with a murder mystery. Usually I try to keep my suggestions to this on topic, but I don't care. I want everyone to read it.
Sure.
And then the other book that I recently just finished, I was listening to the audio of, is My Brilliant Friend by Elena Ferrante. And if you just like reading stuff from other countries, which I do, this book is set in Italy in the 1950s, and it's just a story about kids growing up.
Cool.
Yep, love it.
Very cool. So as Heather said, I am also reading The Cloud Cuckoo Land. So I'm also just recently got a recommendation about another kind of like fantasy mythology type book called Hounded by Kevin Hearn, and it's called The Iron Druid Chronicles.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it.
So how many books are there? Ooh, there's like a lot, I think, right?
There's like seven.
Yeah, maybe there's a lot.
Seven-ish. But it's a lot of fun. It's about the main character, Atticus, who, if you read the book, I keep picturing that Ryan Reynolds would be so good as this character, because their humor is very much the same.
Yeah, the humor is really good in the book. That's like, I also read it, obviously. Yeah. Of course. Is there ever a book on here that we both haven't read? But I read the first one. Emily's into the second one now.
Yeah.
But yeah, its MO is like a lot of little asides and little like quirky little comments here or there, which are really entertaining.
Yeah, it's witty. And this book also mentions the Green Man, the mythological
yes. person. And the other book that mentioned the Green Man is The Wheel of Time,
right?
Which Emily finally finished, guys.
Finally finished.
She literally finished it. Holy
moly. 6 months. Or more.
I don't know. You mentioned it in every...
husband took the book back and he's like, well, you really put this book through the ringer.
Like, sorry. Were there crumbs in it?
You know, there probably is one or two.
I'm hoping there will be a crumb next time I read that book, which will be in like 30 years from now, because it's going to take me up 25 to finish the rest.
Exactly. Yeah. But very good. So, yeah. So, reading... Or Red Hounded, now reading Hexed.
Hexed.
By Kevin Hearn.
Okay.
And then I also just recently listened audiobook of the first Witcher
book. Oh, like the TV show?
Yeah, it's called...
Do you watch the TV show?
Yes.
Is it good?
Yes.
Okay, because I know people that really like it, and I never started it.
So the first book is called The Last Wish, and I watched The Witcher when it first came out, you know, I don't know, 2019, 2020, somewhere around there. And I really liked it. I was totally into it. But the second time around, and after listening to the book, everything makes so much more sense.
Don't you love that?
Yeah. I have, like, a whole new appreciation for the first show. Because the show, like, it skips around a lot in the timeline.
That's exactly why I'm rereading Cloud Cuckoo.
Okay.
I'm loving it so much.
Great. Because everything, like, you're like, oh.
You're like, oh.
I know that character now.
Yes.
And now
that's when so I them.
Read that, you know, 500 pages later, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, also, you know, if you like Witcher stuff and monsters and that idea. The Witcher.
The Witcher.
Hexed and...
Hounded.
Hounded and Cloud Cuckoo Land.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot in the plate right now.
Okay. We just gave them way too many suggestions. It's okay.
It's fine.
You guys have time because we only do this podcast every couple of weeks. You have plenty of time to read in between. Mm-hmm. We only require you to read 6 chapters every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That's very low bar.
It's nothing.
Very low bar. Okay, so that's all for this week. Next week we'll be covering chapters 25 through 30.
Yep.
Is that what we're going to do?
36.
Well, because how many chapters are in this book? Because are we to the point where we have to do 7 yet?
There's 44.
So this will be up to 30, and then the next one will be up to 36, and then it would be 36 to 44. Okay, so the last two will be 7 each. So this one's still 6. Okay, so 25 to 30 of The Cruelest Month by Louise Penny.
Yep, so don't forget Armand's words of wisdom. I don't know, I need help, I'm sorry, and I was wrong.
Goodbye.
That's all. Au revoir.
Oh, good one. Is that French?
This podcast was recorded and edited by Emily and Heather. Our music is by Robert Sellis.